Hey everybody, my name is Ryan Knoll, entrepreneur, business coach, running a cleaning company called Tidy Casa, and I'm joined by one of my good friends, Neil, who's running Made's awesome maid agency that's run out of California right now, but you're franchising all over the country. How many franchises do you have at this point?
We have 20 individual franchisees and I think 23 total locations.
Awesome. So, yeah, you're a legend. You're an inspiration. I always love talking to you. I feel like every time I talk to you, I get at least 2% smarter. So I'm ready to dive in here and connect a little bit more. So, you know, I you were asking before we kind of got on the camera here to talk a little bit about kind of our background and kind of where we started. And we've got your franchisees on the call as well. I'm going to be pitching in, asking some questions, which is great. We'll have some live feedback here. But tell me a little bit about, you know, kind of the Cliff Notes version of your background, your coming up and getting into home service.
Yeah, let me get the origin story, and Ryan, I'll kick it off to you right afterwards. So we probably started around the same time, like 2013, 2014-ish. The OG days of the cleaning days when we all found about it on Reddit. I was working corporate job, did a couple of years as a side hustle, and started to go kind of hard into the Airbnb space around 2014 when it started to come up. I quit my job in late 2015. I think we were around like 25 to maybe 30,000 in revenue at the time I quit. Margins were not great. I didn't know what I was doing. Everything was out of whack. But quit my job, booked a one-way flight down to South America and started traveling. And I was supposed to travel for a year, and it becoming 7 years of traveling while building the business, and figured out a way to do it fully remotely. And starting 2020 is when we started franchising it out. So a couple of the franchisees are with us on the call over here. And yeah, they're buying the remote local model of how do you run this in a lean way, fully remote, using global talent and scale that way.
Yeah, no, I love it. I was talking to Chris Schwab the other day, and he was talking about how he's kind of become known as the, you know, remote living, working, made this guy. But he's like, I got that all from Neil. Neil's my inspiration.
There's always the next generation.
So I don't know if you knew that, but you're changing lives, man. Cool. So what was your job before you got into the maid stuff, if you don't mind me asking?
I worked in private equity, so finance, investing in tech companies.
Okay.
Yeah, Ryan, you were at an SEO agency, I think, right?
Isn't that crazy? I worked for an SEO agency. I worked for a really big one, a number of them. So I had an SEO agency that had over 1,000 clients. Not mine. I would have never quit that type of income, but I was managing it. And then I got another job at this, you know, big, sexy marketing firm. Doing SEO for really large clients. So like I was working for Microsoft, Starwood Hotels, you know, so that's my background is search engine optimization. But it's just, it's such a hard, I just being an employee sucks.
Yep.
I don't know. I can't say it any different than that. I just always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I tried so many different things to break into entrepreneurship and to make that happen for myself. And just nothing was clicking. Nothing was coming in. And, you know, I had a business that built SEO software where we'd go on Google Maps and do a search for you and then find where you were located. And then, you know, on the map rankings, then go out a little bit and do the search again, then go out a little bit and do the search again. So now that's just a local search grid. Bright Local does it. White Spark does it. SEM Rush does that. But we were doing it way before anybody else was doing it. But it's such a hard business to get into, like these sexy software as a service type things. It just, you know, you're trying to reinvent the wheel in a way. And, you know, just like you, at some point I read Rohan's blog post, and the big unlock for me was don't try to do anything super sexy. Don't try to do something that nobody's done before. That second mover advantage is everything. Like being able to look at somebody who's running a plumbing company or a garage door company or a whatever, and just copy them to start. And starting from a good first base of We can see the model. We can see what's working for them. We can see what their prices are. And then we can innovate from there instead of having to innovate, you know, from, you know, nothing.
Yeah.
Right. And I think you had the same experience reading, I think, Rohan's blog posts on Reddit. Right.
Yeah. Same thing, man. I'm super curious on like the early years. Cause like for me, I didn't know what I was doing, and hopefully like with a lot of franchisees now, they could avoid our early mistakes. How was your growth trajectory when you started?
By a franchise.
Like, how, like when you started, like were you doing a side hustle? What was the growth scale?
Yeah, it was just a side hustle. Nights, weekends, that kind of stuff. So we really, I was working my day job. And my day job, I was fortunate that my whole job there was, here's a big project, work on this for a week. And I would just, it was just research based, mostly looking at a website and saying, this is where you need to improve, change this, do this, move this here, whatever. And that would take me about a week. And then I would do an hour long presentation to the client on that thing. And then that would be, you know, that would be the job. That was the presentation. So it gave me a lot of free time to where I wasn't, didn't have to be in meetings or be anywhere. And I could just answer the phone, answer my, you know, emails while I'm supposed to be working on this other project. And I would just do that other project actually on the nights and weekends. but I was physically in an office because this is before, you know, remote work was really a big thing. So I would just literally go out on the patio. There's a patio right behind my desk, but just fortunate where I was sitting, and like answer on my cell phone and like take credit card numbers and things. Doing a lot of that. And then I had a couple clients, cause I wasn't making a ton at that time. I think I was making like 65K a year or something. Mm-hmm. And, it was enough to kind of pay my bills, but not enough to put into the business. So I lucked out, and I had a friend who had a client of theirs who needed some extra SEO help. So for like, I don't know, $2,000 a month or whatever, I was helping them as well. This was like my third job at the time. And then just taking that money and putting it into this other project of Tidy Casa, my business, and just grew from there. And I think the beauty of it, you know, starting that way versus like actually going out and cleaning houses myself, is that we get the benefit of never doing the work, which is when you put yourself in a position of running the business, doing the work, doing the fulfillment on the work, and then having to grow the business at the same time, you end up on this kind of seesaw. And it's really hard to get from that sort of what we call a stage one business to stage two, you know? So I got to jump that by having a day job and forcing myself to have to hire maids to do the cleaning for me and never having to do it myself. So yeah, I mean, I probably did that for about a year and a half, got the company to $500,000, $600,000 a year, really, pretty quick. And then it just kind of got stuck there. It got hung up.
Yeah.
And that was just because I was working in my day job. And the thing that I learned there was, when you're doing that, doing kind of the two things, there's eventually going to be a time where there's friction. You know, you start feeling that if I can put more time into the job and maybe I'll get a pay raise, maybe I'll get a promotion, or I can put more time into the company and maybe it'll make a little bit more money. But right now I got to pick one because I'm putting as much time as I possibly can, as much money as I possibly can into both, and things just aren't quite moving. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I kind of felt that tension, I actually waited about 6 months and just kept saving money. I was very conservative, very worried about, you know, taking this big leap. So I just did that for 6 months, put all that extra profit I made in the bank. And I was just like, hey, can I actually pay myself doing this? And just kind of experimented with just moving that amount I would pay myself into a bank, another bank account, just to see. And then as soon as I was comfortable, I finally made the jump, and I wish I would have done it sooner, because, you know, there's so many things that were broken with the business at that point. Paying cleaners too much, not charging enough to clients, didn't have the right insurance that I should have had. I was, you know, just doing silly things. And I would have probably learned those lessons a lot faster if I was forced to, you know, actually make some money with the company
earlier. Do you think you would have grown faster if you quit earlier?
I think, 100%. I would have grown faster if I had I would have grown faster if I would have quit, because you know that tension is what was I couldn't spend more time in the business, and the business needed the time and needed the attention. But you know, I think mentally for me, I needed to build up that savings.
Yeah, I think it's about risk tolerance for everyone and when they actually made the leap. Ryan, one thing I'm curious on is the marketing tactics which worked. And by the way, zero to like 500K in a year and a half. It's freaking awesome, dude. Like, that's massive scale. Was that mainly because like,
yeah, well, you SEO know, the first like year was a skyrocket. Yeah. First year was like a skyrocket. And I got to that half a million really, really quick. And then I got stuck. And that was the thing that I needed to work on, is I needed to go back in and redo my systems to move from half a million to, you know, I think the next big jump after I kind of made a couple little changes was like 800,000, 900,000. And then I got stuck there too. But I, you know, eventually got into doing more coaching and learned about business systems, and the systems that got you there aren't what's going to get you to the next step. And what I needed to do was reinvent the systems at all those different places. Half a million, a million, you know, 1.5, kind of hit the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. And Ryan, you coach a lot of people right now. Like, you're actually a business coach, and it's not just for cleaning companies, but for a lot of different companies. I'm curious to talk about, and we could trade on this one, what's working right now? Because what worked 10 years ago when we started no longer works. What worked 3 years ago no longer works. It just constantly evolves. There's some stable points like SEO, but that'd be super interesting to see what you're seeing in the grapevines right now.
Yeah, I mean, Google's really eating everybody's lunch. Like, any business I coach, my own business, there used to be a higher diversity of places you could get leads. You know, Yelp was an awesome place to get leads and grow. Angie's List was a little bit before I started, but that was a really great place. Craigslist, you could get customers off Craigslist. Thumbtack was another really great one back then. This was about 10 years ago, but they all kind of went to the wayside as Google just kind of ate everybody's lunch. You know, I still use Yelp. I still use Google quite a bit, but now where Google had like local SEO and organic SEO and then Google AdWords, now it's, you know, Google Maps, Google local service ads, Google AdWords, you know, retargeting ads. There's a lot. There's a lot playing into it.
Gotcha. Is that where is that where you're typically seeing across other industries you coach in as well? It's pretty much all Google based, or what is working right now in terms of digital marketing?
Well, what I'll tell you is, yeah, Google's where people go. That's just the instinct. That's the first thing. That's probably where most businesses are going to get at least 30-40% of their leads. What I will tell you is the thing that people miss the most. So, you know, you want to do your SEO stuff. I'd usually suggest people invest in SEO, make maybe a little bit of light organic SEO, trying to rank in Google Maps, talking about citation building and responding to reviews, doing that type of stuff early on, because that's relatively easy, affordable, and you'll get some leads pretty quick. Organic SEO takes a lot more effort and a lot more time. So you have to be in a position where you can spend that money and not expect a return right away for at least a year. You know, and then Google ads are obviously great. Google local service ads don't give us a ton of leads and have gotten pretty expensive, but they still work. Your phone will ring. The thing that people miss the most is networking and getting out of the house.
Okay.
As a small business, there are a ton of resources, especially these home service companies. You can be going to BNI groups. BNI can be hit or miss. You can have a really good group or a not so good group. Kind of depends on the group you're in. But BNI is great. The Chamber of Commerce is great. There's property management associations that you can join where you will literally walk in and you'll be the only home cleaning company there. And they might have an apartment complex that's got 1,000 units in it. They're turning over, you know, 20, 30 units every month. And they're saying, hey, here's our preferred vendor, call Tidy Casa to get your apartment cleaned. And that's just, you know, free money. And they don't usually need anything more than just getting to know you. Yep. So that type of stuff can be really powerful. Just getting out of the house, impressing the flesh. People really miss the value in doing some of the traditional marketing stuff. You know, we're as, you know, modern people that kind of grew up with the internet, because we're about the same age. We don't think postcards can work and networking can work. You know, it's harder to do when you're doing the remote living stuff, but there's a lot of power to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. When we were at the Conquer meeting, the Conquer conference this last year, every year they announce people that, you know, broke a million. And there was one company that they called up specifically. He got to 1.5 million and he didn't even have a website. And I just was so blown away by that.
Yeah.
You know, didn't have a website, just traditional marketing.
I was bringing up a story of someone I interviewed on the podcast like a few episodes ago. And she has a cleaning company in Australia. Doesn't have a website, does $1 million, only has a Facebook page. That's it. And all her business comes from Facebook. Mm-hmm. Like, I truly believe in any marketing medium, you could have $1 million from just one marketing medium. Now there's some obviously where it's like, if you're going to rely on Yelp, yeah, you can, but like maybe not if you're on the East Coast, right? There's some obvious ones. But for example, if you only double down on apartment complex associations, property management associations, and that's it, you could have $1 million business. If you only double down on like going hardcore on Map Pack SEO, really optimizing that, you could have $1 million business. It's just, there's so many ways to do it. I think what a lot of people miss out on is they try everything, right? They try a little bit of one. It kind of works. It kind of doesn't. Let's go to the next. Go to the next. I wish in hindsight I didn't do that, because I still do that a lot. But it'd be better just to say, let me spend and go hard on one for this amount of time. And if it doesn't work, I've optimized it. I'm not trying two or three things at once. I'm trying one thing at once, and then I go to the next one, to the next one. And sometimes, Ryan, I think it just depends on the personality of the person, which is unfortunate. Some people just really don't want to go out and do meetup groups. And the landscape right now is you can't just rely on LSA. You have to get out of the house. So the people, and I think there's a lot of cleaning companies out there who were started on the backs of LSA 2-3 years ago, it's not going to work anymore, right? And they're going to have a hard time because they're not willing to get out of the house. And even a year or two, I think tides are going to change, and all of a sudden there's going to be something else online which works because digital changes so fast. But the current season I think we're in is one of get out of the house marketing. And the truth is no one else is really doing it. But that's what's going to work right now.
Yeah. 100% agree. It's important to get out of the house and do a little bit of networking, traditional networking, like sending out postcards still works. I was meeting with another coach, and we were talking about traditional marketing stuff and what works. And I think we have this instinct to send everybody an email or a text. Emails work great. Texts work really, really great. But when you're texting people and emailing them, emailing specifically, you're really only reaching about 17-18% of your audience. So I have a list of like 10,000 people. So I'll send out an email and I'll get a good amount of leads. But what he was saying is, you have their address. We clean their house. You know, unless it was a move in, move out, you know, 90% of our customers, we have their address where they're actually living. We can send postcards, you know, postcards, flyers, brochures in the mail really, really work, especially if they know your company and they've worked with you in the past. Just get a big stack of postcards and send it to everybody that's been over a year, you know, just check in. After about 2 years, probably doesn't make sense to send postcards, but then you're getting 100% of your audience, you know, because they're going to open up that mailbox. And they're probably just going to see your card and throw it away. Maybe 99% of them will do that. But it's really good brand building and brand awareness, and you can do a good job getting customers to come back with a little bit of persistence there, and it's dirt cheap.
Yep. Ryan, I'm curious, what does your, how many team members do you have internally? I'm guessing you're using mostly all remote staff as well. What's your team look like right now to operate your business?
Yeah, so we're not, I don't use a ton of VAs, like people in the Philippines and stuff. I do have one executive assistant in the Philippines. She's great, love her to death. And she mostly helps me with managing my inbox and kind of dealing with these special projects that we're working on. So we're trying to build a system to help teach our independent contractors how to best work with us, how to make money, just keep them happy, keep them engaged. And there's like little things that just keep coming up with everybody. Every new cleaner has to learn this lesson and this lesson, and they usually do it by messing up on a client's house. So what we're moving to is having a go high level where it just kind of drips out that information 1 week at a time, you know, which we're really, really excited about. So she's helping me with that type of stuff. So working on my special projects. Then I've got a operations manager, or a, you know, basically what would be my COO, who does all my hiring and feedback with my cleaners. She's doing sales training with the people that answer the phones. And then we've got two dedicated phone people who handle customer service and sales. And then we've got one person. What's that?
Where are they located, your phone sales team?
The phone people are all in Ramona, California, weirdly. And that just happened by accident. We had a person that was here in Phoenix with me. She actually lived in a little city outside of Phoenix called Buckeye, Arizona. And you know, my philosophy has always been, I want to have a remote workforce. I don't want to have an office to come into. I hate commuting. I like working in my office here. It's nice. I like it. It's cozy. Very much a homebody. So I just want to work in my office, or have the option to work from a beach. You know, that's always been my goal with the company. So, you know, when I posted the ad, I was looking for people that knew about Arizona and Phoenix and where we were, but I posted it for remote, you know, and it's maybe like an hour drive, you know, from Phoenix. So she knows Phoenix, she's comfortable with it. She's got family here, but she's kind of outside the city. So she worked with me for 3 or 4 years, and then was going to up and move to Ramona, California. And I told her I can't afford California prices. Good news, she was moving to Ramona, which is not LA. You know, so I got to keep her on the same price. And she does a really weirdly good job networking with people and recruiting really awesome talent just from her leaving the house and networking that she does on her own. So she kind of brought in the other two that have been doing a phenomenal job. And they were just people that she met locally in Ramona. And then we have one other person who's in Buckeye, who is also somebody that she brought in and met when she was living in Buckeye. Yeah. And, you know, I'm very particular about the people I hire, but somehow she's just been bringing in this really great talent. So
yeah. I'm actually kind of surprised that most of these people are in the US. Because they don't need to.
I think
be,
a lot of people are that. No, I mean, not at all. And nobody ever, like, Ramona, California is still like a 5-hour drive from here. So there's never a time when we get together. We video chat on Zoom like this. That's about it. I never see any of them.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So what about you? Tell me about kind of your structure at this point.
Yeah. So the two entities, right? There's the franchise entity and the LA entity. I'll talk about the LA business, which is, you know, my actual operations for cleaning, which I started in 2013. So right now we have a general manager. Her name's Lisa. She runs the operations. And under her, we have two to three people who do operations. And operations would be mostly like anything cleaner related. Could be recruiting, same day fires, scheduling, whatever. And we have two people who also do phone sales. Now we're open 7 days a week, so that's why we need two sets of people.
Oh wow.
And so Airbnbs, right? Like things just happen. I think Sunday is a little bit
Yeah.
more of a skeleton crew because we don't really, besides Airbnbs, we don't allow any bookings. But still, you have to have someone manning it. So we have two people on the sales side, so they kind of cross cover each other. Phone calls route to the sales team, and same day operation scheduling will be the operations team, and then Lisa the manager is managing those five people, let's say.
Yeah, it's about the same, my same size, but man, 7 days a week is rough. But I guess that you wanted to go after the Airbnbs.
Yeah. And like I said, like Saturday, Sunday, honestly, are a lot chiller. Like we don't close as many sales on Saturday and Sunday, and Sunday's a little bit more of a skeleton crew. But yeah, it's 7 days. So to go after the Airbnbs.
No kidding, man. I started doing 7 days a week. I was just doing residential. We tried doing Airbnbs, but I couldn't figure it out. I don't know if I wanted to spend the time on it. And all the Airbnb hosts that I was working with were just, they're particular. They wanted you at a special time. They wanted you
Yep.
that 7 days a week. Had a really rough time with it. So what's your experience been taking that on? And I guess how much of your business is Airbnb?
Yeah, I mean, like in the first 1 or 2 years of me doing Airbnb, like we got our butts kicked, right? Like you underquote, you don't know what you're doing, you onboard what we call psycho Sandras. Like there's just so much that goes wrong, right? And now we know, like, not everyone who inquires we want to onboard. If someone's way too particular, there's no point. The truth is, like, I think for franchisees as well, at the beginning you want the most business and the most learning, and then over time you're going to kind of whittle away people. So I think even franchisees will probably onboard some psycho Sandras because some of them are just going to sneak through no matter what. But the goal is now that what we teach franchisees, how do you know the different categories of the avatars of who people are coming in? We have property manager Paul, we have psycho Sandra, there's Cheap Charlie. There's a few other types of avatars we like and some we don't
I like
like.
all these the alliterations in your avatars.
Oh yeah, we got photos and AI generated stuff of them now. But we are still really focused on Airbnbs. And I think for LA, we're probably 60, 65% residential at the moment. We used to be like way more Airbnbs pre-pandemic. And the rest would be Airbnbs on the
Oh, wow.
franchise locations. I think it just depends on the territory. Some territories are heavy vacation rental focused. And the truth is, like, you could scale really fast with that, but it does take more active management for an Airbnb client versus residential.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense because everybody, we get a ton of calls for Airbnbs and we don't have the bandwidth for it. We don't want to, it, you have to reinvent things. You have to do
Yep.
things a lot different with those. Okay, so what was the, so you just got into it and where everybody else was giving up, you're like, hey, I'm just going to power forward.
I just chased the money. It wasn't like, hey, let me crack the code and this is going to open up Pandora's box. Like, I was just like, I don't know. We get like, this is what seems to be working. Like, you figure it out. So, like, you get beat up enough with a problem and eventually you're going to try to figure it out. So, figured out that, hey, we need a specific software which is going to automate scheduling, which is mainly geared towards Airbnb hosts, things like that. So, I wouldn't say it's the perfect system yet, but it's one that allows us to actually go after those clients in a way that most other cleaning companies say no to.
That's awesome. Okay,
Yeah.
so how do you get new Airbnb clients? Are you just going on Airbnb and direct messaging people?
No, it's an easy way of getting banned. That's what I used to do. But there's a lot of
Yeah, that's what I
things.
would assume.
I used to do that for sure. I think so. What works the best, of course, is inbound. Because when they need a cleaner, it's easy enough to rank for Airbnb cleaning because it's a low competition keyword. So Airbnb cleaning or vacation rental cleaning will probably outrank most people for that. So most of it's going to be SEO based. Other franchisees have started doing what's called like community marketing, get out of the house marketing, hosting meetup groups, doing cold outbound, meaning cold emails plus cold calls to property managers, stay in front of them. We're constantly testing and trying different things out to see what works. Airbnbs for us are kind of like there's not nearly as many as residential homes naturally, right? So the leads don't come as frequently as residential homes, but when they do come, they're all the equivalent of a weekly job at minimum, right? At least 4 cleanings a month. So you kind of wait for them to come and then you get a spike and then you get a spike. but the leads aren't like rapid fire. That is kind of what I found. It just takes some time.
Got it. Yeah, a little bit more lead nurturing. That's kind of the way it works. You know, if you're in carpet cleaning and you've got a $200 ticket, you're gonna close it on the phone. When you've got to, you know, clean a hotel every month for carpet cleaning, it's gonna be 6 months of, you know, negotiations,
Yep,
right? So
exactly.
the more that thing's worth, the more we're just gonna talk about it.
Yeah. Ryan, I'm curious on your end for the
Okay,
residential
so
side.
SEO's been the Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I think we're gonna ask the main question, both the same question. I was gonna ask you on the residential side, where do you normally get most of your clients, and like how does, maybe you could share like any KPIs you try to give to your salespeople of what to close and how do you get them on a recurring versus one time? Just like what's the sauce for that side?
You know, I don't know if I've figured out the sauce for converting a one-time to a recurring, aside from the fact that you need to have good cleaners. And it sounds really, really simplistic, but anytime I've ever been in a situation where the business isn't growing, like, you know, business isn't growing, we're not making our numbers. I'm checking my marketing, I'm checking my sales, I'm, you know, listening to some of the sales calls just to see kind of what's going on there. And what I'm seeing when I'm doing that is everything's fine. Like our marketing's working, we're spending the right amount, nothing's broken anywhere. And the last thing I always kind of check is the quality of the cleaner. But if the cleaner's really good, you really aren't going to have to do a lot more. You know, you'll send them to do a one-time cleaning, and the customer will go, "Wow, this is a really great experience. I want to keep this up." And the hard part here is it's obvious when somebody's bad. When somebody's a bad cleaner, you just know I got to get rid of them. There's that voice in the back of your head that's just like, "Hey, you can fire this person. You should listen to that voice 100% of the time and just kick them out." When they're okay, that's the crappiest part. And the thing that we have to keep in mind is if you look at certain products, like if you look at a Ford Fiesta versus a BMW, the difference in quality between a Ford Fiesta and a BMW is the BMW is maybe 10% better, like 10% faster, 10% better noise when the door closes, 10% better sounding stereo. You know, it's such a huge difference when you actually kind of break it down and look at the fundamental pieces of the different cars. But the 10% better in the car market gets you a 5x higher sales price for that vehicle because of that slight little bit of quality. And that's true for home services. You know, it's little things like showing up on time, communicating well with the client, not, you know, getting that attention to detail. And to kind of keep an eye on, you know, how well cleaners are doing, the instinct is to look for customers to call you and tell you you did a bad job. You know, we don't have anybody that goes around and QAs work. Right. There's no quality assurance. We're just kind of trusting on customer feedback because, you know, going and checking on these jobs just takes a really long time. So what we learn to look for is not necessarily, "Hey, we got a bad review from this cleaning team." It's that we didn't get anything. You know, the cleaners that are really, really good, every other job is going to leave them 5 stars. That's a 5-star review on Google, or we call people after the fact, just, "Hey, check up, how was your cleaning?" They'll leave 5 stars over the phone. When cleaners are bad, customers just kind of ghost us and we don't hear anything. And, you know, these aren't bad cleaners necessarily, because you'll get some 5 stars. It'll be like one out of every 10, one of every 15 people will say, "Oh, yeah, this is a really good experience." And the other people are like, "Wasn't really good. It wasn't really bad. I'm just not going to call them anymore." And they
Got it.
won't return those feedback calls. And that'll be it.
And Ryan, what do you do for cleaner quality, especially with contractors? Like you mentioned the Ford Fiesta versus BMW, right? The difference is like presentation, doing a walkthrough at the beginning, those small little nuances which make a big difference in client experience. How do you help handle that with your team, especially with the contractor model?
It really comes down to feedback. I mean, we've got a couple things that we do. We want to have reward systems for our internal staff that rewards mm-hmm. them when the company does well and when they kind of hit their scorecards and their KPIs. So for my staff, they've got sales goals. Depending on who it is and kind of what their personal goal is, it's either, you know, it could be 60% close rate on the phone calls that are closable. You know, because some of them are customers that we just really don't want. Yeah. So, you know, we're like, hey, 60%, this is a really good number. We gotta avoid those. What'd you call them? Like something Susan's?
Psychosandras, yep.
Or, yeah, Psychosandras. You gotta avoid those. So it, you know, for the cleaners, it'll be something like that. And then, for the office staff, it'll be something like that in terms of KPIs. And the cleaners have a different set of KPIs. What we're looking for is a low number of cancellations. We don't want customers that are reoccurring, or in your case, Airbnbs, to just all of a sudden stop getting cleanings or cancel their regular scheduled cleanings with us. We want them to maintain a certain level of reoccurring appointments. And we've noticed that when cleaners are really, really good, we won't be able to give them any more because they're just fully booked up with reoccurrings. Mm-hmm. So we implemented, I mean, it's carrots and sticks. With independent contractors, when they mess up, you can take it out of their check. It's kind of mean to say, and the reality of that situation is we don't really do that, but we threaten it a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, so for us, we have our 200% happiness guarantee, which means we're going to go back and re-clean if we messed up. And if you're still not happy, we're going to give you your money back to the client. What that translates to for us with the cleaners is, hey, if you miss that thing, we can't pay you for it. So that's coming out of your check. If you have to re-clean this house, you got to go back over, which means you can't take more work. And it usually takes maybe one time for them to mess up and have to go do a re-cleaning, for them to never really want to do it again. So that happens. And that was probably one of the first things that I really put in place that helped with just keeping people honest and keeping people paying attention to quality. Just recently, I implemented another more of a reward system where if they can hit those benchmarks that we were talking about, where they're, you know, at least, you know, 4.8 on our internal review system, if they have at least 40% reoccurring clients in their database, which means they have to keep those people happy. They can't just keep eating my leads and then throwing them away because they're not keeping the clients happy. And they have a certain level of cancellations, and they move up different pay tiers. And the pay tiers start at copper, you know, it goes copper, bronze, silver, gold. And if you get to gold, you're essentially making $10,000 more a year than at the copper level. And everybody starts at the copper level. So what I like about this is I can actually pay a little bit less for the cleaners who are new, who are still learning and aren't as experienced. I can't rely on them as much. And then the people that have been around for a long time and are kind of maintaining this level of reoccurring clients, and they're just easy to work with because they're just getting things done. Yep. I can pay them more because they also cause me less stress. I look for ways to build these systems where I can kind of gamify the things that I want to reinforce and, punish the things that I don't want to have happen. And we have some pretty good feedback from doing that kind of stuff.
That's really good.
How about you, Neil? Like, what do you do with your contractor models to kind of reinforce quality?
You know, so honestly, some of the things you say just won't fly in California. And I've kind of realized this, that I think every state is going to be so different with how you act with it. And I think for, you know, some people asking these questions, they might be thinking, am I allowed to do that? It depends on your state. If you're living in California, I'd say no, right? But if you live in almost any other state, I think you can implement a lot of the stuff Ryan's saying. Now for us, because we can't really carry it in stick as much, there's certain things like you could kind of do, like the best cleaner is going to get the best jobs. You give them positive verbal reinforcement. You could do kind of back end things like, hey, 5-star Google review from the client, bonus, right? Things like that, which are kind of subtly encouraging them. And on the back end, if they don't have great reviews and stuff, we just stop giving them work because we're not obligated to give them work. So that's kind of like the stick without it being such a formal thing. on our end, I think what we found is like the cleaners who are good are good, right? And they're kind of good from the beginning. It's kind of rare for us to find a cleaner who started off bad and they end up being really good. The only time I've seen that happen is if they're bad, but they have a fantastic attitude. So some customers just love them. Like even though their cleaning is okay, they're like, they're just so fun to be around. I like them. I want to keep them. And that's the case that could work. So on our end, our philosophy is recruit constantly, do test cleanings. The cleaners who are good stay. The ones which are B cleaners, which are like kind of the okay ones, those are the ones you kind of have to be like, keep them on the roster because you never want to be without cleaners, but we don't quite know. And then our goal is just to find the cleaners who are the right match for that recurring customer and try to just keep everyone happy. It's tough to do, honestly, because, you know, finding the right cleaners, it's not simply a matter of paying more. I do think there's some correlation. Like if you're underpaying, you're not going to get the greatest cleaners, but that doesn't mean you have to crazy overpay. There's a certain limit where it doesn't make a difference. So we probably pay a little bit more than market for an independent contractor, but because of that, we're able to get bigger jobs and feel comfortable with it. And so I think we just take that trade off a little bit.
Yeah. I'm in the, And that really, really good advice too, is just to make sure you're talking to, you know, hiring lawyers and HR professionals, because you can hire HR consultants. A lot of people don't realize you can do that just like a lawyer to kind of walk you through what's allowed in your state, because it's different state to state. So it doesn't always have to be a lawyer per se, but there are people that kind of specialize in, hey, this is what's allowed here.
That's a good tip.
So yeah, no, really, really good feedback.
Ryan, question for you from the audience over here would be, how do you manage overflows? So let's say you get into busy season, you're like, crap, I'm booked up. I don't have enough cleaners. How do you manage this whole process?
Yeah, so this is going to be a little different for me without all the Airbnbs, because Airbnbs are very much, I need it on this time and I don't really have an option. For me, one of the things that I do is I notice that there are certain times, I mean, we just kind of avoid getting into that overflow situation. So there was another question in the audience about the type of systems you have to implement to grow. And this ties into how I handle overflows. So the first system that I think really helped me kind of get over the $1 million mark was not keeping track of my revenue, but keeping track of my capacity. And this became a metric that I talk about with my team on a weekly meeting every single week. What's our capacity at for Phoenix? What's our capacity at for Tucson? And what we found was when we started keeping track of that, it starts telling you a different story than revenue does. Because there were times when it's like, hey, we were at, you know, 40,000 this week, we're doing good. And then the week after, it's like, oh, we're only at 34,000. What happened to that extra $6,000 that we were making last week? And you look at your capacity, it's like, well, we're at 95% capacity. We need to hire more cleaners. If we were at 70% capacity and the numbers dropped, we need to fix our marketing or fix our sales. So the first thing is just to keep track of that capacity and know what you're capable of doing for your business and what your business can handle and where those ebbs and flows are coming from. Did we lose clients? Or do we need to hire more cleaners? And that can help a ton, right? The other thing that I did was I started giving customers incentives to book on the not busy days. So for us, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, very much are slow days. So there's a coupon code. It's on there almost year round, except for right before the holidays, like big holidays. But it's $20 off for booking on a Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday. And that's because if you're doing a move out cleaning and you've got an option between Thursday or Wednesday, I want you to take Wednesday and save that $20, because that'll allow me to book more on Thursday and Friday, which are our absolute busiest days. So it's essentially that coupon of $20 off for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is essentially my surge pricing for those days. So it's, you know, the software that I use doesn't allow me to actually do a surge pricing, but if I had it, that's essentially what it is, right? Same thing that Uber does. When it's really busy, we're just going to charge a little bit more.
Gotcha. That's a great tip for managing capacity. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, so we got a couple more questions that came through workflow. Somebody was asking about systems. So Jenny was saying, curious to hear more about the systems you updated at different periods of growth. And I'm happy to talk about that. I don't know if you have any insight there, Neil. You want to jump
I'd actually
in?
love to hear from your end, and I'm happy to pipe in too.
Cool. Yeah, well, I'll go through it, and then you can kind of give your skinny. So the system, when I'm looking to build systems, I think the core of this question is, hey, what do I need to do to get to the next level? Really, the trick to identifying what system to build is to keep track of your time. We, I think, spend a lot of time inventorying our money, but inventorying our time is just as important. Just like me learning how to inventory my capacity, my inventory, I needed to keep track of my time. So when I was really, really small, everything I was doing, I was answering the phones, the emails, running credit cards, calling customers with their credit cards didn't work. And as I got busier, I started to notice, hey, this being on the phone situation is taking way too long. I need to hire somebody to get on my phone. So that's actually the first system is when you're moving from a stage one business to a stage two business, stage one is the business owner does everything. You clean the houses, you do the marketing, you take the calls, you run the credit cards. All that stuff is you. You own all of it. When you do a stage two, that's when you hand off the actual fulfillment part, the technical side. So if you're a plumber, an HVAC company, or a maid, other people are doing that for you, and now you as a business owner is doing the admin stuff. When we want to step into the next role is when you hit that wall of, hey, I'm answering this phone way too much. This has become 7 hours a day of just being on the phone. So you hire that person, and that person's going to kind of take over your phone calls and your emails. And now you as a business owner are freed up. So that's really kind of your first system is having that employee who can take those phone calls. They've got their own tools for how to deal with, price objections or sales, booking appointments. You've got the systems in place that can kind of facilitate them taking that over easy, pricing calculators, that kind of thing. That's sort of system one, just getting yourself away from the phone. As you continue to grow, the systems change, right? So when I got stuck at 1 million, the one of the biggest systems that I needed to figure out was hiring. And I got there by kind of looking at where the holes were. We started measuring our capacity, and then we learned that I was not hanging on to cleaners for as long as I should be. Or there was opportunities for growth there, and I wasn't hiring them fast enough because we were constantly at capacity. So what I had to learn how to do was build a system that would allow me to hire more people. And I went from being able to hire like one person every 2 months to being able to hire two people a week. And that was just from putting a little bit of effort and thought behind it and paying attention to it. Like, this is the next system. I need a hiring system that's really advanced, that's going to move people through this pipeline faster, because the world that I was living in, where I would just post on Craigslist and I would get 100 ad, applicants, and I could just call any of them, and I could take a week to call them and they'd still be looking for work. We weren't living in that world anymore, so I had to build that system. So those are the types of systems that we built to, just solve some different problems. And, the thing that kind of blew me away about this idea of systems is I was stuck at about $1 million a year for maybe 3 years. I think realistically 4, until somebody pointed out, the things that got you here aren't going to get you over there, and you need to change your systems and put new systems in place to support that extra growth, support that extra money, support all the extra projects that you're doing. And just by knowing that, I started looking for where those systems needed to be. I started building some stuff and changing some stuff, and then I grew like $500,000 that year. It was just because somebody pointed out to me that I needed something different.
It's always the small stuff, man. I think a lot of people look for the silver bullet of what's gonna get them to the next CEO, and it's oftentimes the fundamentals. That's it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, there's this light switch that you can flip and that's what's going to make you a millionaire. But it's really like new system that we implemented recently was just keeping track of close rates for our salespersons. Because we just weren't doing that. We weren't having a problem with it, and we got to a spot where like we need to keep track of this. And then we found out that one of our people was closing at, 65%, and the other one was closing at 14%. So it's like, okay, we don't need more marketing. I need to fix sales. And then we just started keeping track of it. And the system was keep track of the sales close rates. And then she went from 14% close to 41% close within like 30 days, just because we were following up with her and holding her accountable and measuring it. So that system wasn't any more complicated than here's a spreadsheet where we're keeping track of this,
Easy
you know?
fundamentals. Cool. Love, man. Well, dude, tons of value bombs over here.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Hey, I always love talking to you. And kind of nerding out with you. So, always a good experience. I know we're getting kind of up on time here. So I don't know if there's any more last minute questions from the group. We'll take them. But other than that, I don't know if I talked about it before, but just hang out for a little bit while it's uploading. There's a little upload thing in the corner, so we'll
Definitely.
stop the recording, then it'll tick down for a bit.
All good. Good chatting with you, man.
Cool. Well, here, I'll just hit the stop button then.